Brooks Running has a new shoe for you runners out there. Did you hear that? Better turn up your volume. In fact, turn it up to the max. Introducing the all-new Ghost Max. It's got all kinds of things to make your knees and ankles feel protected, like Max Cushion, Max Soft Landings with DNA Loft V2 Foam, and Max Smooth Rides with their Glide Roll Rocker. Feel better on your run with Ghost Max. Learn more at brooksrunning.com.
Vaginas are absolute magic, and Ollie is here to give them the respect they deserve. That means shame-free supplements made with clinically studied ingredients to keep your pH in check and your pleasure a priority. Put yourself on top. Go to Ollie.com today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, hey, you are listening to the Oh Crap Potty Training Podcast. I am your host, Jamie Glowacki, and I am the author of Oh Crap Potty Training and Oh Crap, I Have a Toddler. Okay, so today I'm going to cover a couple of topics like weaning off of bottles at nighttime, accidents, how many accidents are appropriate, and what to do with the child who sits willingly but then gets up and he's on the floor. And if I have time, I'll take a couple of questions. So before I start, I wanted to tell you guys about a fabulous book that a client recommended to me. It's called My Body Sends a Signal. It is fabulous. So it doesn't have to do with potty training per se, but it has to do with the somatic experience of emotions. Somatic experience means in the body. And if you listen to my other podcast, Oh Crap Parenting, I talk a lot about this. Is we know now that it's really good, you know, when a child is melting down or having a really hard time, right? We validate their feelings, which doesn't mean their feelings are right. We all get our feelings, even if they're incorrect, yes? So we don't necessarily give into a feeling or make the feeling fact, but we do validate the feeling. All feelings are valid, but they are not all right. So, you know, what I see parents typically do is say something like, you know, I can see you're very frustrated. I can see that you want to hit, or I can see you got frustrated and that's why you hit so-and-so, right? And so we're validating the feelings. And somehow we think that that's teaching emotional literacy because we've named the feeling for the child, right? We've said, I can see you're frustrated. In potty training, it might be like, I can see this is new and uncomfortable to you, right? Like we don't say words like scary or hurt. We do say like, wow, this seems really uncomfortable. Comfortable to you. Now, the problem is with most toddlers, and this is more on the parenting side, again, not necessarily specific to potty training, but you're in that age. So I figured I'd tell you about this book. This book really teaches you, where do you feel that frustration? Where do you feel it in your body? And this helps children break down what leads up to having a volatile or explosive emotion. So when we get angry, and by the way, this is good for adults too, it usually starts with something, right? Like say a boundary's been crossed or somebody's been mean to you. It starts somewhere. Maybe it's your heart pounding. Maybe your fists clench. Maybe your face gets very tight and angry. But a lot goes on in your body before you express the actual emotion. And this is how we slow things down. So in adults, noticing our somatic experience helps us slow down like a psycho mom response, right? So it's always like, can we pause before we get into catastrophic thinking, before we explode and lose our shit on our kids, right? Can we pause? And so many grownups even have a hard time with the pause. Where do we feel it in our body? Could we pay attention to those signals? And so often with our toddlers, what happens is they go 0 to 60, right? Like think about even the most innocuous thing. You cut the sandwich into triangles instead of squares, right? Boom, 0 to 60. Whereas if we can slow a child down, like find all the room in between 0 to 60, we could potentially slow down the reaction and learn to regulate through hard emotions. So this book, it's called The Body Sends a Signal, and Natalia McGuire is her name. Natalia McGuire does just, it's a fantastic job. And part of the book is you know, going through the feelings, but also there's a section of storytelling where they have very short stories you can read to your child, and then the child has to ascertain the emotion. Very cool. And if you guys know any, if you know my work in other realms, I love the book Hunt, Gather, Parent. And a big part of that book is storytelling. Our kids learn a lot through storytelling. So teaching emotional wisdom and literacy is not just reflecting the emotion back to the child, but it's actually taking in the somatic experience. So again, I just think it's a fabulous book. Okay, moving on. Okay, let's talk about weaning off of a bottle. So this comes up a lot with night training, and parents will come to me and say, they'll even hire me and say, you know, having such a hard time with night training, can't get a handle on it. I know. They're not supposed to have fluid before bed, but you know, she's still really tied to her bottle at night. So there's a large amount of people after the age of two who are giving bottles of milk or formula, which is pretty astounding to me that you would give a child formula after two. You know, they should be eating well enough in their diet, and they're sort of addicted to this bottle at night. Now, this is really problematic. And I find that it's one of those places where we're exhausted as parents, not up for the fight. And we also don't want to intrude on bedtime and make bedtime a battle, right? Because then things go haywire and the child gets less sleep. So this is often the last bite to go. In highly conscious, highly educated parents sending their kids to sleep in a crib with a bottle of milk. Guys, this gets pooled up in your gums, and the bacteria from the lactose, that it can just rot your teeth. So there is bottle rot. It's a real thing, and it's not just relegated to uneducated people, right? I literally have worked with two PhDs who are like, no, I just don't feel like fighting it right now. So I think that's really important to recognize. There is also the fact that at these ages, kids get to be like picky eating, and parents, you know, sometimes are just like, geez, I just need to get the milk in. If I can just get the milk in, right? So these are sort of the problems that get in our way of giving up that bottle before bed. Now, number one, night training. If you have a kid who can take 8 ounces of fluid and not pee through the night, that's awesome. Good for you. But the majority of kids aren't going to be able to hold their bladder when they have that much milk that close to bedtime. Also, as I've discussed, one of the biggest dial movers in helping your child stay dry at night is no fruit or dairy after like 2 p.m. And guys, like, people are giving like fruit, non-dairy, yogurt. Like, don't try to skirt the issue. Your kids should not be eating, period. There really shouldn't be bedtime snacks. And I'm hearing a lot of that, like late dinner and then a bedtime snack right before bed. That's really bad for our sleep. Like, your body's then digesting. Your child really shouldn't need a snack right before bed. If that's happening, we want to fix eating across the board. But what happens also is that a lot of parents, again, are like filling up the child. The child hasn't eaten well. You know, every kid goes through this picky eating. Picky eating is on the rise. It's super rampant right now. It's kind of crazy, but milk is not a great replacement. And you may feel like it is, you may feel like formula is, or other things, but listen, milk takes up space and it has too little iron. Your average 2 or 3 year old should be drinking 250 to 500 milliliters of milk a day. If that is about 1.5, maybe 2 cups in a day. Okay. And remember that a toddler's stomach is as big as their clenched fist. If you are filling that stomach with milk, there is going to be little room for other things. I also say this about snack foods, right? If you're giving your kid a whole bunch of Goldfish crackers, that stomach's going to be full and they're not going to have room for other things. But actually, if you're drinking more milk than that, or your child's drinking more milk than that, it really can lead to iron deficiency anemia because it's not full of iron. So your child's missing out on other iron filled foods. And it can also lead to protein loss in the gut. And I mean, this is a bigger issue, and this isn't, I would say, common, but I have worked with clients who, you know, I had one little girl who was drinking a gallon of milk a day, and the parents like, I just can't get her to eat anything. And I was like, well, the first thing would be to stop the gallon of milk a day. And they were having all kinds of potty training issues, and it was just too much liquid with not enough nutrients. Milk is a growth food, and I would argue that we don't actually need it. My son just didn't like milk, and he did fine, and we never replaced it with anything. I'm not a fan of milk replacements, period. I think they have too many additives, and it's not meant to be consumed that way. Like, we're not meant to juice almonds, but I digress. We don't necessarily need that for the calcium. There's other foods. There's a lot more foods that have it, but it is a growth food and there are nutrients, but it's not replacing solid food. We also have an issue right now. I'm about to do a podcast episode on my other podcast about this. We're seeing an evolutionary change right before our eyes, which is really uncommon. Usually an evolutionary change happens over generations, but because of picky eating, our food supply being like kind of junky, soft, highly processed food, pouches, over excessive use of pouches and puffs, our kids aren't chewing. And babies now are being born without wisdom teeth. And we have infant sleep apnea because jaws and sinuses are narrowing. So the scientists are pretty freaked out because we shouldn't see such a drastic evolutionary change in our facial structure and our jaw structure, but that is happening. We're also seeing really immature GI tracts where the peristalsis needed for pooping, right, is being not formed properly because kids aren't chewing. They're not masticating. They're not doing, which is pre-digestion. So the peristalsis isn't working the way it should. So these are of major concern. And, you know, maybe it's easy to overlook it when it's just your kid and it's like, fine, you're getting through the day. But I have the dubious luxury of seeing these really big trends. And this is freaking me out because, again, we shouldn't see such a drastic evolutionary change. So we want our kids chewing food and really digesting that. So that's another problem with milk at night. Now, let's say you're doing it and you need to figure out a way to wean it off. Number one is whenever we're looking at a problem like this, we want to look at what are the barriers, right? So often when we have toddlers who are so volatile with their emotions, the barriers often are like, well, giving up the bottle at nighttime might cause a tantrum and we don't want to dig into nighttime, right? Because we don't want the child underslept. We want them to go to sleep on time. So when you are deciding to wean your child off the bottle or the formula, or it's the bottle. Yes. It's not the contents as much as it is the bottle itself. Pick a time where maybe it's a weekend, maybe it's a long weekend where everybody can maybe sleep a little later if bedtime is delayed. And then you do want to start the bedtime a little bit earlier to build in the fact that your child might have a meltdown. Now, the easiest way I have found to do this is to completely separate out the fluid from the container. So if your child, I don't know many kids who are drinking water with a bottle. But you want to get rid of the sucking action of the bottle because that's going to affect the soft palate development. That's going to affect their teeth development, right? But most people are dealing with milk or formula or something flavored, right? That's pretty yummy. There's the lactose and the formula has some sugars in it. So there's a yum to it. But they're using the bottle almost as a binky, right? Or a pacifier, whatever you guys call that. And so there's a sucking action that is comforting and self-soothing. So there's a dual purpose with the bottle and the milk. So we separate out the fluids and this goes a long way in helping your child sort of effortlessly give up that bottle. So if you put the milk in an open container, must be an open container, no sippy cups. No. We got to get rid of the sippy cups, period. No sippy cups. I don't even recommend a straw cup, an open cup with the milk or the formula, and then the bottle with water. And you can tell your child, yes, you can have your bottle. Yes, you can have your milk. No, they go like this. And in 9 times out of 10, that is enough. One night and the child is like, I am all set. I don't want water in this sucky thing and I don't want my milk in an open cup. And so it can be that easy. And it's kind of great on your end because you're saying yes and yes. And so that's kind of cool too, because that way you're not in a power struggle. No, you can't have your milk. No, you can't have your bottle. Yes, you can have your bottle. And yes, you can have your milk. It's like this. And a lot of kids may not even have the wherewithal to be like, this goes in there. You know, they're just like, these things aren't right. I'll take nothing. And so again, I've had most of my clients, the kids, like the first night, they're like all set. But if it goes on for a couple of nights and there may be a meltdown, again, build in the time. So if that's the problem, make sure you give yourself the opportunity to be successful. A long weekend, again, where everybody can sleep in and your child can afford to have a 20-minute meltdown and then still get to bed on time. And that is that, again, no sippy cups, no 360 cups, an open cup. Your child really should be drinking with an open cup after, you know, 2 years old for sure. All right. So let's talk about, this isn't one particular question. This comes up a lot on social media. This comes up a lot in just questions across the board. which is like, you know, there's one or two accidents a week. Or I'll often hear from somebody who's like, oh, we've been potty trained for, you know, 2 years, and but we still have an accident every day. That's not cool, you guys. And you can go back and listen. Early on, I did an episode on how many accidents are okay. An accident a day is not okay, especially after 2 years of potty training. It's not okay even 2 months into potty training. And one or two accidents a week, again, you have to take everything with a grain of salt and where you are in the process. If it's your third week of potty training, one or two accidents might be appropriate. If it's, you know, 2 or 3 months into potty training, one or two accidents isn't really great. So as always, the biggest thing that you want to look for is patterns. So oftentimes it feels like, oh my God, there's just accidents everywhere. Or for some parents, it's just no big deal. They're like, ah, it's one or two accidents. They'll get over it. But you do want to attend to it, because this can be like a sweater with a little pull on it. You know, it can start very minor, but then start to really unravel. So look for patterns. Is it always at school? Is it always between 3 and 6 p.m.? That is the witching hour. That is the time of most accidents. Your kid has been holding it together all day. Now they're just falling apart. That's when people tend to be the most hungry. So, you know, is it that? So if you can figure out the pattern, that's going to go a long way in helping you determine, you know, how to fix the accident. After the first couple of weeks of potty training, the accident should be explainable. If they are coming out of nowhere, your child appears kind of clueless, that's something you want to attend to, even if you need a consult. Like, it should, you should be able to explain the accident, like, oh, I ran one more errand, or, oh, you know, I meant to prompt her and I forgot, and ah, damn it, I wish I'd prompted her, or I knew I should have asked, you know, I should have stopped at the restroom on the way home, something like that. Again, if they're out of the blue, that's different. It is tremendously hard if they're happening at school. It's really always a challenge to get to the bottom of daycare because you're not there. So that's why we do have our daycare blueprint course, which is really great because there's so many different scenarios. Like, you may not even realize that's a scenario you're dealing with. And if you are thinking of potty training over like a spring break or something, you should get the daycare course anyway, because it really helps to like bridge, you know, potty train knowing you're going back to school. But again, it will help to know, oh, wait a minute, it's not just willy-nilly accidents. These accidents are happening at school, or these accidents are happening in the morning, or these accidents are happening with a tantrum, which they don't count, right? Like, if your kid is regularly peeing themselves when they tantrum, there's really nothing we can do about that. It's like the heightened emotion. I've talked a lot about that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, it's not okay. And it does need attending to in some way, shape, or form. Because again, I find that these are the moments that, again, it's like pulling on a sweater and it'll just start to unravel. And then pretty soon you're like, oh my God, my kid's peeing all over the place. What the heck happened? So we want to catch everything a little bit early. Early intervention wins the game with parenting across the board. So let's talk about, especially in the first week or two of potty training, the child who will willingly sit, totally happy to sit, totally like, yeah, I'm totally on board with this potty training thing, but they can't release. And then they get up and they pee on the floor. So this is pretty common when you're first learning. So in the first week or second week even of potty training. So there's two components to this. One is, for some kids, it's like they have the components of the puzzles. They have the puzzle pieces, so to speak, but they're putting it together wrong. And if you've ever watched a young one do a puzzle, that happens all the time. I used to call this the shape sorter. So you know that, I think it's a Tupperware product. It's red and blue. It's got yellow handles. It's kind of octagonal, and it's got the shapes, and it's yellow blocks that go in the shapes. And so there's like a triangle and a star and a cross and a circle. And if you look at a little one trying to figure it out, they have no concept that they're supposed to put the circle in the circle, and they try to jam it in the triangle, and they get all sat and frustrated. And then when they figure it out that it goes in the circle, they're like, woohoo. And so that's kind of how I think of your kid in the beginning of potty training. Remember, this is the first linear learning your child is doing, right? This is the first time they're doing a specific order of things for one desirable outcome. Up until now, it hasn't mattered. They've been able to do whatever they want. There's no desirable outcome. They can build their blocks the way they want. Yeah, they can walk, but of course they're going to fall, right? There's not one desirable outcome. Like with potty training, we're pretty specific. Your pee and poop have to land in the potty. And there are these very specific steps to get there. So oftentimes in the very beginning, when you see a child who sits, doesn't release, stands up and pees on the floor, they have the pieces of the puzzle, but they're wrong. They're jamming the circle into the triangle. And it's so just give it a couple more days usually and that resolves. It's like they have the pieces, but it's wrong. Now, if it continues to go on, what you might be looking at is fear of release. And so that's what I call that sort of performance anxiety. The kid sits, the pee won't come. They stand up and then all of a sudden lets loose. So that could be fear of release. And remember, the first level fixes for fear of release are we want to do, you know, running water. You can have the potty chair in the bathroom with the tub water, especially that's especially forceful, blowing bubbles. We want to do a little bit of maybe a tickle or something funny that makes the child laugh, horse lips or raspberries. That's a really good like cervix release when you're in labor. They can help the sphincter muscles release. So those are sort of your first level fixes. Oh, and pouring warm water over their genitals, that super helps too. So a lot of times in that first week or so, if you think your child's just having a little fear of release, those are the things you're going to do to help the child release and give that a shot. Now, if it continues, there are children who, you know, I've talked about this in many, many podcasts, massive pee withholding, but that usually looks different than the child who sits. So a child who's willing to sit, just like with poop, a child who's willing to sit indicates a level of being a willing participant. Yeah. So it's, they're not resisting it consciously. It's just their muscles are a little stuck. And that's how we sort of determine and help troubleshoot these problems and categorize them in severity, right? So if a child like happily sits and just can't release and then gets up and pees, that's not active resistance. That's just a slight performance anxiety, a slight fear. And so those first level fixes should be enough to get you through. If you have a massive pee withholding, you absolutely need a consult. And it does happen. It's like I've said in many podcasts, it's sort of this pee withholding ramped up during the pandemic and it just kind of hasn't gone anywhere. I think it's just a level of anxiety, even though our kids have pretty cush lives, right? There's just an anxiousness about the whole world. So if you have that, it is not a sign that your child's not ready. It really isn't. Same thing with poop. It's a sign that they have an anxiety, a muscular reaction to anxiety, and you need some help walking them through that anxiety because it doesn't get better. My experience is if you have a massive pee or poop withholder, it doesn't get better. It escalates and it gets worse as they get older. So it's imperative that you get help. Okay, I think that's good for today. So I'm going to log off. Next week, I think I'll do a Q&A for you guys. I meant to get some more questions today, but I hate to move these too long because I know you're a busy mom who's chasing after a toddler who might be trying to be on your floor. As always, you guys, I appreciate you. I appreciate you listening. I hope you have a beautiful day and rock on.